This is 1A. I'm Joshua Johnson in Washington. If you feel a bit breathless today, you're not alone. After the testimony of Brett Kavanaugh and Christine Blasey Ford, the nation has found it hard to catch its breath. Millions of Americans held their breath during the dramatic testimony on Thursday. Millions more shouted themselves hoarse at what lawmakers on both sides of the aisle said and did in Kavanaugh's confirmation battle. There were also private conversations about personal pain evoked by Professor Ford's testimony. Conversations that used to only be whispered, but now, in this Me Too moment, can finally be said out loud. Those stories of sexual assault matter, and we will spend a lot of tomorrow's program focused on them. Today, let's focus on what happens now with Kavanaugh's nomination, what's going on with the FBI investigation of Ford accusations, and how this reflects on our national politics. We'd love to answer your questions and get your take. We're taking your calls and voicemails at 855-236-1A1A. That's 855-236-1212. Email us 1A@WAMU.org, comment on our Facebook page, or tweet us at 1A. Joining us in studio is Jeffrey Rosen, president and CEO of the National Constitution Center in Philadelphia. He's also a professor at the George Washington University's Law School. Jeffrey, welcome back to 1A.
Great to be here.
Speaking to us from Harvard is Brian Fitzpatrick, a professor at Vanderbilt Law School and a former clerk to the late Justice Antonin Scalia from 2001 to 2002. Professor Fitzpatrick, welcome.
Thank you for having me.
Professor Rosen, let me start with you and the confirmation hearing. It seems like one of the big complaints about the hearing was just the way that it was done, that it was public at all as opposed to behind closed doors, the timing of when the allegations from Professor Ford were investigated. I'd love to get both your sense and Professor Fitzpatrick's sense of just the structure of the hearing itself and how that might affect the big decision that needs to be made about whether or not to put Judge Kavanaugh on the Supreme Court.
Yes, as you suggest, I think it's fair to say that both sides think that the process was unfair. Republicans complain the allegations were brought out at the last minute. Democrats say they're not being investigated properly. And it's remarkable how little we've learned since Anita Hill in 1991. Remember Anita Hill's op-ed where she said we must have a neutral, nonpartisan body to investigate allegations, initially confidentially, and they should only go to the Senate to bring the nominee and the complainants together after there's been an investigation. That wasn't done since 91, and now we have no procedural rules, no sense of what the standard of proof should be, complaints about the FBI investigation and its scope, and it is frustrating for anyone who cares about the nonpartisan legitimacy of the confirmation process and the rule of law to have such chaos.
Professor Fitzpatrick, what do you think?
I think that this has been a very shameful process, and I think it could have been completely avoided. When these allegations were made in July, they should have been turned over to the FBI at that time, and an investigation should have been done at that time behind closed doors. And then, if these allegations were corroborated, they should have gone in executive session with Judge Kavanaugh and brought to his attention what the FBI investigation found. All of this could have been handled behind closed doors without dragging these people through the public spotlight, causing emotional distress to them and their families. It was very much mishandled by Dianne Feinstein. I'm very disappointed in her, a senator I have great regard for, by the way. I don't think she was very smart in how she handled this. And it does not hold water for me to say that Dr. Ford requested confidentiality, and that's why we had to hold on to this thing until now. When these allegations came in, they're serious, and Dianne Feinstein should have called Dr. Ford and said, listen, we cannot do anything with this unless we turn it over to the FBI. So you have to allow me to turn it over to the FBI, or we cannot pursue these allegations.
It sounds, Professor Fitzpatrick, that like what your core quarrel with Senator Feinstein was kind of what she did. You know, because she says that she did contact Professor Ford and say, look, you know, if it's purely an unnamed allegation, there's nothing I can do. It sounds like you would have preferred, instead of that being a spur to testify openly, for a different kind of private process, where from there it would have gone to the FBI.
Absolutely, because she did turn it over to the FBI. She just did it in September after the hearings were over, instead of in July when it could have been done without turning it into a public spectacle.
Professor Rosen, what do you think about Professor Ford's testimony in terms of what impact it would have on the ultimate outcome, whether it changes anyone's mind, for example, about Brett Kavanaugh? I feel like, in a way, it kind of gave people more ammunition to deepen their perspectives on whether Brett Kavanaugh should or should not be on the Supreme Court.
Well, you saw, I'm sure, that the polls over the weekend, which suggested that the ultimate support for Brett Kavanaugh didn't much change after this phase. His supporters dug in their heels, as did his opponents. This is consistent with that recent study that suggests that highly polarized people who hear arguments on the other side are likely to become more committed to their initial position, not less. So although passions have definitely risen and the future institutional legitimacy of both the Senate and the Supreme Court is very much in play, the ultimate outcome may not be altered.
What about the way Professor Rosen, about that Judge Kavanaugh comported himself? I mean, he has been much lampooned for his behavior, including the cold open of Saturday Night Live's 44th season debut this past weekend, where Matt Damon played him in the open to the show. A number of people are saying that it didn't help his case. On the other hand, others have said, if I had been accused of what he was accused of, I'd be pretty ticked off, too.
You're absolutely right. Those are the reactions. And, you know, just speaking descriptively, there are even the conservative side, there have been commentators who said that I think he was unfairly treated. These allegations are outrageous. It's understandable that someone would react that way with allegations he believes to be false. Nevertheless, that was not a judicious statement, and it would call into question his nonpartisan neutrality on the bench. And as a result, Democrats like Henry Waxman in the House are already saying, if he is confirmed, we plan to have impeachment proceedings, both to find out what happened and also about his temperament. It's really fascinating because the one Supreme Court impeachment in history, Justice Samuel Chase, was over his alleged judicial temperament. He gave harangues against Republicans from the bench. Chief Justice Marshall testified for him. He was narrowly acquitted in the Senate. And that came to stand for the proposition that you can't impeach someone because of their temperament or because you don't think that they're judicious, but only for an actual crime.
We are speaking to Jeffrey Rosen, president and CEO of the National Constitution Center and a law professor at the George Washington University. Also speaking to Professor Brian Fitzpatrick of Vanderbilt Law School and a former clerk to the late Supreme Court Justice Antonin Scalia. Glad to get your questions and thoughts as well. Email 1A at WAMU.org, tweet us at 1A, or comment on our Facebook page, especially if the lines are jammed up. But we always welcome your calls and emails at 855-236-1A. Professor Fitzpatrick, I'd like to put the temperament question to you as well, partly because that's part of what our audience is reacting to. Helene tweeted, after witnessing Brett Kavanaugh's indignant rant toward Democrats in his statement, it proves to me that he is incapable of bipartisanship, thus unfit for a SCOTUS, Supreme Court of the United States, position. What do you think?
I think it was a very unusual tactic to deploy, but I do think that he had to show some indignation. If these allegations are false, as he says they are, to just sit there and calmly refute them, I don't think would have been as persuasive to people. He tried that calm route, as we know, on Fox News last Monday night, and it didn't go over very well. I think it went over better this time. I will say, though, even though his opening statement I thought was pretty strong, except for his reference to the Clintons, which I thought was totally unnecessary, his Q&A with the senators did not go so well. I think he was very defensive and not very mature, frankly, in how he handled himself. And so I give him a mixed review.
I wonder, in a way, if it even matters, though, in terms of the confirmation. I mean, I think back to Clarence Thomas's hearing regarding the Anita Hill allegations, which C-SPAN ran, I think it was the day before the Kavanaugh-Ford hearing, which was very instructive because, you know, Clarence Thomas was not calm in terms of the way he responded to Anita Hill. I mean, he used the word lynching twice. He called it a high-tech lynching, and he said, I'm not going to give you the rope to lynch me with. Not to hang me with, to lynch me with. When they asked him, did you hear Professor Hill's testimony? He said, no, I'm not going to listen to lies. And yet he was confirmed. I wonder, in the scheme of things, Professor Fitzpatrick, how much temperament really matters. History would suggest that at the end of the day, it's a piece, but it may not be that big a deal.
Well, I think you hit the nail on the head earlier when you said that it doesn't really change anyone's mind what goes on in these hearings. Everyone looks at it through a partisan lens. And, you know, academics have studied something called implicit bias, which tries to get at the prejudices that we have against other people that may not be explicit prejudices or things that are very explicit in our minds. And what they have found when they do these studies is that people have more prejudice against people who have different political views than they do, than people who are of different races or genders than they are. So political bias is a very serious matter. And so I think when all of us look at these hearings, we just see things through our political sphere rather than maybe being neutral observers.
I want to follow up with you on that when we continue, particularly whether or not Judge Kavanaugh will be able, if he becomes Justice Kavanaugh, to do the business of the Supreme Court outside a partisan lens. Because there are other jurists, you know, John Roberts among them, who have made decisions that conservatives didn't dig, the Obamacare decision, for example. And I kind of would like to get your sense of that, Professor Fitzpatrick, when we come back. We also want to talk about the FBI investigation. Many of you are asking about that, like Peggy. Peggy emailed, if the FBI does not find any evidence to support Dr. Ford's testimony, and if it does not find any evidence that Judge Kavanaugh has lied, but he is not confirmed, will he be able to keep the job he currently has? Good question. He's currently on the D.C. Court of Appeals. We'll put that question to Brian Fitzpatrick of Vanderbilt, Jeffrey Rosen of the George Washington University Law School, and the National Constitution Center. We'll bring in one more guest for the conversation, and we'll get to some of your calls as well. I'm Joshua Johnson. You're listening to 1A from WAMU and NPR. This is 1A. I'm Joshua Johnson. We're talking about the Kavanaugh confirmation and its impact on the nation. We're speaking with Jeffrey Rosen, president and CEO of the National Constitution Center and a professor at George Washington University's Law School, as well as Brian Fitzpatrick, professor at Vanderbilt Law School. We'd love to speak to you, too. Comment on our Facebook page, tweet us at 1A, email 1A@WAMU.org, and we're taking your calls and voicemails at 855-236-1A1A. Speaking of calls, let's get to one now from Florida. David is on the line. Hey, David, what's on your mind?
Hey, Joshua, how are you?
Good. What did you think of the hearings last week?
Well, the impact on the nation, you just said the impact on the nation. That's exactly what I would comment on. I feel that I'm actually glad that the hearings were made public because it allows us as a nation to weigh in on what exactly is going on in Washington with our politicians and how they're making decisions for us with regard to these things. So I think it was very important that we all chime in on what's going on, regardless of our political aspirations. I myself have dealt with the alcoholism in my past. I found recovery in 1985. I understand the struggles of alcoholism, but I also understand that in my youth, when I struggled with alcohol, as I grew into adulthood, I was able to hide my drinking and justify my drinking. And this is a characteristic of alcoholics. Very adamant about defending their drinking and also at the same time admitting that they do not have a problem. Mm-hmm. So I think it's very interesting for us to see individuals come to terms with their past and how it affects their future and how that affects the future of all of us.
David, how do you think this will affect the confirmation battle, though? I mean, I hear you about these other conversations that need to be had. In terms of whether or not Brett Kavanaugh makes it to the Supreme Court or not, what impact do you think the last few days might have?
One particular clip I saw on CNN was when one of the senators was questioning him about an FBI investigation. And he refused to answer. He falls silent. He explained that he was open to what the committee would welcome. However, he personally would not comment on whether or not he would accept an FBI investigation. And it was very interesting to watch his wife her response to him, because when he was not answering that question, she was staring at him very sternly, and I always often wonder what exactly was she thinking when he refused to answer the senator's question regarding an FBI investigation.
Yeah, you're referring,
I feel that,
yeah, you're referring to that question that Senator Dick Durbin of Illinois put to Brett Kavanaugh.
Then there's nothing to hide. We should be open to any possibilities.
Yeah, David, I appreciate you calling in. Thanks very much. And that was the question that Dick Durbin of Illinois put to Brett Kavanaugh, and he paused for a long time, and then Chuck Grassley, who's the chairman of the committee, Republican chairman of the committee, jumped back in, and then after that, Rachel Mitchell, the questioner for the GOP, basically lost her job, and then the GOP senator started jumping back in. Let me get to some more of your comments. David, thanks very much for talking to us. Catherine emailed, as a woman listening to Kavanaugh defend himself last Thursday, I didn't find his presentation appropriate. It smacked of bullying and intimidation. Aside from that, conspiracy theories like revenge from the Clintons aired in Senate testimony is a major disqualifier in my eyes. Before we bring in our next guest, Professor Fitzpatrick, if I could ask you to respond to Catherine, particularly whether or not someone who began by making a partisan broadside can be trusted to sit on the Supreme Court and administer equal justice under law.
Well, you know, I think we have to be realistic about all of this. Our Supreme Court justices come from the political world. They work for president of one party. Oftentimes, or they have other experience in politics, they are, to some extent, partisan in their outlook, but they try to put that to the side as best they can when they get on the court and focus on the statutes, the Constitution, the administrative regulations, and I think they do a pretty good job. Obviously, people's worldview influences their decisions to some extent, but I think we'll find that if Judge Kavanaugh is confirmed, he is a successful justice, well-liked by his colleagues, just like Clarence Thomas, frankly, is today. If you ask the justices if they like Clarence Thomas, they will tell you, I don't just like him, I love him. Sonia Sotomayor came to Vanderbilt last year and talked to our students, and she said that, I love Clarence Thomas. And so I think we'll get beyond this, but there's certainly going to be some awkward moments for a year or two.
Let's add another voice to our conversation. Joining us now in studio is Elizabeth Wydra, the president of the Constitutional Accountability Center, a public interest law firm and think tank based here in D.C. Elizabeth, welcome.
Great to be with you.
Let me start with a question that I began with for Professors Rosen and Fitzpatrick. Just your general sense of the hearing, both the structure of it and the testimonies we heard from Professor Ford and Judge Kavanaugh, and how all that might affect the ultimate big decision about whether Brett Kavanaugh should become an Associate Justice of the United States.
Well, I think, you know, hearkening back to what the caller your listener just mentioned about the presentation that Judge Kavanaugh made and talking about revenge of the Clintons, you know, there's definitely been a divide between those who are centering Dr. Ford and the other survivors of sexual assault. And as we saw in Judge Kavanaugh's opening, centering the political, talking about the Democrats, talking about whether or not they should have leaked her letter and disregarded her request for anonymity. You know, I think that whether or not you think Senator Feinstein should have tried to raise this another way earlier, she was trying to respect the clear request for anonymity from this traumatized survivor. And maybe it's telling that Republicans would have just leaked it anyway and disregarded her request. But Senator Feinstein was trying to give her the respect that she and her experience deserved. And I think that trying to make this part of a political game, like she came up with this decades-long con to try to stop Judge Kavanaugh from getting to the Supreme Court, is frankly offensive. It's offensive to her and her experience and to the many, 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 many others who have experienced sexual assault and have not come forward because of fear, because of shame, because they worried, frankly, that what we might see in this case would be true true for them, that they would finally find their voice and the courage to come forward, and it would not matter.
I wonder, Elizabeth, if there was any way around the politicking of this, if it was just bound to happen no matter what. I mean, we got a lot of comments very critical of the Democrats, alluding to what you just kind of referenced there. Ev emailed, "The Democrats are showing their ugly side, and the people see right through their deception. They should be ashamed, but that would require morals, which they lack." And Joe emailed, "I'm a moderate conservative, as are most of my friends. We have discussed the Kavanaugh hearings and Democratic senators' behavior extensively. If the Democrats think their behavior will go unanswered, I'm afraid they're mistaken. This entire process needs to be overhauled."
Well, I think that most people would agree that the nominations process for the courts, both the lower courts and the Supreme Court, is broken. It's certainly a problem. But I think that that's kind of a dodge. You know, OK, let's talk about that. But let's first talk about Dr. Ford and her very credible testimony and allegations and what it means for Judge Kavanaugh getting a job promotion to the Supreme Court. I think it's very important to note this is not a criminal trial. No one is at this point trying to hold him criminally liable. So it isn't a beyond a reasonable doubt kind of thing. It's a let's try to get all the facts, which is what the FBI investigation should be doing. And I think we'll get to that soon. And then decide whether or not this is someone among other possible candidates who should be elevated to the Supreme Court. And I think a lot of people would say, if there's a doubt for the integrity of the Supreme Court, then you should vote no. It doesn't mean you think he should be locked up in jail forever and ever, but it does mean that perhaps he should not be elevated to the Supreme Court.
Yeah, Jeffrey Rosen, I wanted to ask you about that in terms of the nature of what we might find from the FBI and what we do with that. A number of folks have been asking about the evidentiary standard as it relates to whatever happens after the investigation. Larry tweeted, "An important takeaway is the way that Republicans successfully changed the standard by which they judged how they viewed Dr. Ford's allegations, from needing merely a credible belief that it could have happened to be swayed, to a criminal trial's beyond a reasonable doubt." And Commit to Vote tweeted, "What if the accusations by Ford and others are corroborated, but a criminal prosecutorial standard cannot be met? Since this isn't a court of law, what would actually affect this nomination?"
What makes this so difficult is that it's very hard to know what the standard should be. So Alan Dershowitz, who has argued for the thorough investigation of the charges, says that there should be a high burden of proof in order to protect the presumption of innocence. Others, Democrats, have argued this is not a criminal trial. It's a job interview. And if there's any doubt whatsoever, the future bipartisan legitimacy of the Supreme Court would be imperiled by someone with a cloud over them, and therefore the presumption should be no. You know, if we try to imagine, what would a hypothetical, completely open-minded senator do? Set aside the partisanship and imagine the kind of Justice Kennedy of the Senate, who is truly undecided about the allegations, thinks that there's some corroboration but just doesn't know what to do. It's very hard to know how to vote, but there's no question that Democrats and Republicans have to be concerned about the legitimacy of the Supreme Court. Justice Kagan said it over the weekend in a speech. He said her colleagues are gravely concerned that the court's legitimacy is something that can transcend politics will be imperiled when people think of the justices as politicians in robes. I would hope that that institutional consideration about the legitimacy of the court and of the Senate would weigh into the senators' votes.
I'm Joshua Johnson, and you're listening to 1A. Let's head back to the phones now. In New Hampshire, Josh is on the line. Hey, Josh, what's on your mind?
Hey, how are you doing? So yesterday I was out to dinner at a restaurant, and I overheard some of the employees talking about Brett Kavanaugh being guilty. And it was relatively slow, and I said, "How do you know he's guilty?" And they said, "Well, I saw the testimony, and the news is all saying he's guilty." I said, "What if the FBI comes back and says there's no substantial evidence?" And she goes, "Well, he's still guilty." And this made me think, no matter what, even if the FBI comes back and says no substantial evidence, you know, they can find, this gentleman is going to be seen guilty in the eyes of many for the rest of his life. It's always going to follow him. The days of innocent to proven guilty are gone.
What do you think that is, Josh? Did you have any sense of why they were so dug in about his guilt?
I kept, you know, I tried to get it out of him, and their biggest thing is we saw the testimony and all the news channels saying he looks guilty. And I don't want to blame the media, you know, I don't want to say, oh, fake news, or, but it's got to be some, it's got to be the mentality. I mean, these were younger employees, probably early 20s at the most, and it's just, you know, I couldn't get over it that they've already thrown him in jail in their eyes. And even, you know, when I asked them if they found no evidence, they said he's still going to be guilty as far as they're concerned.
Yeah.
And it's just sad that it's like that.
Yeah, Josh, I appreciate you calling in. Thanks very much. And Professor Fitzpatrick, that kind of gets to this idea of being tried in the court of public opinion.
Yes, and, you know, like I said earlier, I think people tend to view these things through their own political prior commitments. And if you're a liberal, you look at it and say he's guilty. If you're conservative, you look at it and you say he's innocent. But I do think you raised a very important question about what the evidentiary standard needs to be here. And it has to be something that is significant enough that we do not create a process where anytime someone is nominated, some person can come out of nowhere and say, this happened to me 40 years ago. And if it can't be disproved, then the nominee is rejected, because then you'll see people come out of the woodwork for every nominee. And I don't think we want to create that kind of process. So I think we have to ask for some kind of corroboration before we deny this person his position on the court.
Let me get to a few more of your comments. CSN Ironclad posted on our website, the1a.org. Hopefully the FBI will investigate Ford's story too, and the ties she has to Democrats, and if she lied, and why she's withholding her notes and therapist records. Constance emailed, the Kavanaugh hearing is not about political party, it's about class. When I was growing up in a middle-class Republican household in flyover country, we knew that the rich kids could get away with stuff that would have landed us in juvenile court. Or worse. We also knew that because of their wealth and position, these same kids would still be the leaders of our city and our state when they grew up, with all their past sins forgiven. It's depressing to see that nothing has changed. Rich kids can misbehave abominably when they're young and still wind up on the Supreme Court. Rob posted on our 1A Facebook page, I was very happy with Flake's decision, referring to Republican Senator Jeff Flake of Arizona. It gives the country and Senate time to breathe. Any Democrat who wants the FBI investigation to be longer can now be fully accused of partisan delay since, and Flake's decision was bipartisan. The FBI got Hill's investigation, referring to Anita Hill, done in 4 days, so this should be wrapped up by Friday. Senator Flake and Senator Coons of Delaware, Democratic Senator, both spoke on 60 Minutes in an interview that aired yesterday. Scott Pelley asked a question to Senator Flake that provoked a very telling answer.
Senator Flake, you've announced that you're not running for re-election, and I wonder, could you have done this if you were running for re-election?
No. Not a chance.
Not a chance.
No.
Because politics has become too sharp, too partisan?
Yeah. There's no value to reaching across the aisle. There's no currency for that anymore. There's no incentive.
Part of the interview that Senator Flake gave to Scott Pelley on 60 Minutes yesterday, Elizabeth, that is telling. It's kind of sad, but at the end of the day, it worked. Like, that part of the bipartisanship that the Senate is supposed to include worked the way it was kind of supposed to.
Yes. I mean, let's hope so. Actually, I would hope that Senator Flake would be disturbed by the news that the investigation might be severely hamstringed by the White House's there's some dispute on this, but apparent direction that the FBI is limited as to whom they can interview. And those limitations make it far less of an investigation and more of a foregone conclusion. But I think that shows that, well, the political lens governs when it comes to our elected leaders, unfortunately. I think that Professor Fitzpatrick actually is a little bit wrong when he thinks that that's true for the entire nation. I think that the person who called in about the folks that he was overhearing at dinner believing Dr. Ford, you know, they believe her because they saw her and because they know from personal experiences of themselves or their loved ones that people don't come forward until they have to. And to see her emotion and her credibility was incredibly important. And that's going to affect the Supreme Court in the minds of the nation.
I do want to give Professor Fitzpatrick a chance to respond to that, and we'll respond to more of your questions and comments when our conversation continues. Stay close. We will continue this conversation tomorrow, focusing on some of the more personal revelations that this confirmation process has triggered. We know that a lot of you have stories like Professor Ford's to share, some of which you shared with us. We are so humbled that you would tell us, and kind of sad that we cannot air more of them just because we've received so many. And that's kind of what we need your help with. Figuring out what to do when someone tells you their Me Too story. How have you dealt with these revelations among people in your life? Once the story is shared, what then? Leave us a voicemail, 855-236-1A1A. If someone's told you their story of being assaulted or harassed, or if you shared your own story with others, what happened then to help the healing process? Or are you still struggling for the right response? Tell us your story. You can email us 1a@wamu.org or use our app 1a Vox Pop to send a radio quality audio file and to keep up to date on future topics. And we'll share some of your stories tomorrow on 1a. Back now to our conversation with Elizabeth Weidra, Jeffrey Rosen, and Brian Fitzpatrick. Before we head back to the phones, Professor Fitzpatrick, let me give you a chance to respond to Elizabeth and then we'll keep going.
Well, I do think that the academic research on implicit bias suggests that we tend to see events through our political prior commitments. Now, there are some Americans that aren't strongly partisan. They're the independents, and so they're not going to see things through the same kind of bias. And so I'd be curious to see what the independents think about Brett Kavanaugh. That may be our truest test of who's more credible in these allegations.
Let's keep going on the phones now. Jake in North Carolina is standing by. Hey, Jake, what's on your mind?
Hey, Joshua. I was just wanting to bring up something that I've been seeing talked about a lot online, but haven't heard in your show so far this hour or really on a lot of coverage on NPR. And that's the idea that Brett Kavanaugh should be barred from this job primarily because of his lies that he has told while giving testimony.
Were there any in particular, any statements in particular, Jake, that stood out to you?
Sorry, what?
Were there any statements in particular, Jake, that stood out to you?
Yeah, the foremost is towards the end of his testimony, he was asked if he was watching Dr. Ford's testimony, and he very clearly said no. And I have seen multiple accounts putting him in a room watching from a monitor. And that seems like a demonstrable falsehood that just we can't let slide.
Jake, I appreciate you calling in with that. And actually, Jeffrey Rosen, Senator Richard Blumenthal of Connecticut asked Judge Kavanaugh about this legal principle, a jury instruction. Latin is falsus in uno, falsus in omnibus, which basically says if you lie about one thing, we can disregard what you said about everything. How much should that weigh into Brett Kavanaugh's confirmation, remembering that this is, as we've said, not a court of law?
You're absolutely right about Senator Blumenthal, and that was very impressively pronounced as well in Latin.
I practiced over the weekend.
Nice. Very nice. Folks are tweeting an opinion that Judge Kavanaugh wrote involving Guantanamo Bay detainees where he embraced the same principle and said if you lie about one thing, you lie about others. Now, Democrats are promising that if Kavanaugh is confirmed and they take the House, they will hold impeachment hearings on the alleged misstatements in the confirmation hearings. And they range not only from his testimony involving Dr. Ford and his college classmates' insistence that he was a heavy drinker, even though he says he wasn't, and so forth, but also about alleged misstatements in the first part of the hearings where he said he didn't know about emails involving lower court confirmations or surveillance programs, and the evidence suggested he did. So regardless of whether the Senate chooses to decide that a small misstatement is evidence of a larger one, the Democrats are determined to press these, and they're not going to go away.
Hoosier Mamba tweeted, sometimes the partisan lens is overrated. I am a moderate Republican woman, and so many women that I have known experienced assaults like Dr. Ford describes. A friend from my church, a high school friend, a cousin, a neighbor. We believe her because we have been her. Pamela tweeted, this is an impossible situation. I feel deeply sorry for Ford, as she was obviously sexually assaulted by someone and has spent her life trying to get over it. I also feel deeply for Kavanaugh, as I have a father and brothers. There is no way to prove his guilt or innocence. I should also note that we've been getting a number of voicemails and messages about this from across the country and even from around the world. Artie in Hamburg, Germany, left this note in our inbox.
The Kavanaugh hearings have caught the attention of the German press, be it the Süddeutsche Zeitung or Die Zeit. The opinion, though, is uniform. It's an absolute shock at the lack of respect being shown by the Republican Senate toward the Supreme Court and its own history as the world's greatest deliberative body. The shock is not at the partisan tones of the hearing. The right-left battles, or left-right battles, happen here, too. But what's shocking is the tenor with which the Republicans have been speaking to their Democratic colleagues and the tenor with which the nominee himself used to address the Democratic senators Thursday.
Artie, thanks very much for commenting to us. And just by way of context, Süddeutsche Zeitung is a major paper in Germany. If you remember our conversations about the Panama Papers, the big international investigative report about money hidden in offshore bank accounts, Süddeutsche Zeitung was one of the major papers that helped drive that forward. I wonder, Professor Fitzpatrick, what your take is on what all of this means for just America's image around the world, how the world is reflecting on us because of the way we're handling this.
Well, after our last presidential election, I'm not sure our image can get any worse. I think that it is a shame that the judicial nomination process has become so broken, partisan. The Republicans are just as much to blame as the Democrats. What they did to Merrick Garland after Justice Scalia passed away was unconscionable in my view, and I frankly don't blame the Democrats for retaliating with this nominee. I really think that in order to make the system work better, we're going to have to come up with some major overhauls. And I think that one solution to kind of restore the dignity to our judicial confirmation process is it's a big change, but I think it's a necessary change. I think we have to ask, do we think Supreme Court justices should have life tenure? If they didn't serve 40 years, it wouldn't be Armageddon every time someone retires and there's a replacement. If presidents had a knowledge that every 2 years they would get a Supreme Court nomination, we would normalize this process and it would become more sane. Professors have been proposing this 18-year term for Supreme Court justices for some time.
Yeah, I've heard, and Elizabeth, I was just going to ask you about that. I've heard that suggested that if it was 18 years, you know, there are 9 seats, and you know, every 2 years, basically, a seat would come open, kind of like clockwork. That this might not be quite so much like, oh, we're making this decision that will affect our children and our children's children. It would still be a big deal, but you know, 18 is less than 30 or 40. The question is whether or not that's politically viable. I wonder if that just depends on whether we, the American people, are willing to pound the table and demand it until the law changes. It's not impossible to change the law. It's just difficult. But what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's probably going to be an unlikely proposal for the particular Senate right now. But, you know, I think that this isn't just about the Supreme Court and life tenure, because I think it's about this particular nominee. I don't see the issues around Brett Kavanaugh as being a case of quote unquote retaliation from the Democrats. You know, there are a lot of issues with this particular nomination, in addition to the fact that he would be taking over Anthony Kennedy's seat on the Supreme Court, Kennedy being the vote that basically has preserved meaningful access to abortion, preserved major civil rights protections, and so on and so on. You know, there's
the vote that also wrote the decision in Obergefell v. Hodges,
exactly,
which declared that marriage equality was protected by the Constitution.
Right. We're talking marriage equality. We're talking about housing discrimination. We're talking about affirmative action. We're talking about environmental protections. I mean, this is a huge nomination. But this particular nominee comes with a lot of issues. You know, my organization, Constitutional Accountability Center, opposed him after the hearing based on his record, because we looked carefully at his cases and saw that his views of individual rights did not square with the text, history, and values of the Constitution. His views on, frankly, extreme conservative views on the way that the government should work are, we think, again, out of step with the Constitution. And And then there are people who raise the, you know, credibility issues, as Professor Rosen was just discussing. And then, of course, now we come to the Dr. Ford and others making allegations against him. So, you know, I think we're very entrenched in this current moment, and we should be. But there's been a lot going on in this nomination leading up to this point that isn't just about partisan politics. It's about what impact this particular nominee will have on the Supreme Court.
And with regards to the way that we choose Supreme Court nominees, Joseph emailed, part of the problem with the Kavanaugh nomination is the fact that Republicans lowered the bar for Supreme Court confirmations to a simple majority. Had the previous two-third majority been still in effect, President Trump would have had to nominate a more moderate conservative. I'm Joshua Johnson, and you're listening to 1A. Let's see if we can squeeze in a few more quick phone calls before our time is up. In Pennsylvania, Victoria is on the line. Hey, Victoria, I know our time is short, but what's on your mind?
I just wanted to say, in terms of being an independent, I know you were questioning where they stand. The reason I'm independent is because I don't totally agree with either side, but I very much believe in freedom of choice and everything that she was just talking about. So, you know, the whole issue that's come up recently, that aside, his record just doesn't stand up to somebody that should be on the court. I agree with the credibility issue. Whether he did or didn't do this, even the question with regard to if he was the character in the book, the way he smiled and almost seemed proud to be that character in that book, although he denied it. Mm-hmm. That in itself to me is telling too.
As an independent, Victoria, I wonder how empowered or disempowered you feel in the process. I mean, you know, the plurality at times, the majority of America's voters are independents. We're about a quarter Democrat, a quarter Republican, about half independent. But the decisions are all made by partisans. Does that make you at times feel like you're out of the process in a practical way?
Well, it does. I mean, I'm not the only one that feels that way, I'm sure. It's very frustrating. I feel as if they get to do what they want, even though we vote for who we want to go there based on what we would like to see happen. It just doesn't happen when they get to Washington.
Yeah. Victoria, I appreciate you calling in. Thanks very much for talking to us. Let's head to Miami, where Fatima is on the line. Hey, Fatima, what's on your mind?
Hi. I just felt like Dr. Ford has been criticized a lot more versus Kavanaugh. Even though it kind of seems like Kavanaugh is being criticized more, for somebody of his caliber, he definitely reacted in a way that, I mean, if you really look at it, a guilty person would react. And he didn't answer a lot of the questions. And ones that he did answer, he did lie. And again, he's been caught in those lies, like one of your callers mentioned earlier. And I know it's not so much of the topic right now, but I know you're going to bring it up tomorrow. Mm-hmm. But like personally as well, I've been a victim of sexual assault. And this happened at a young age. I'm 25 now. And I've never said it either. So I can understand where she's coming from. That, you know, she didn't necessarily come out at the time that it happened and everything, but, you know, she did say this again back in July, and it's still coming out till now.
Yeah.
So, you know, those are just things that I think we need to look at as well.
Fatima, I appreciate you giving us a call. I appreciate you being honest about what you have dealt with. Thank you for being willing to share that. Jeffrey Rosen, the question of Dr. Ford's behavior versus Judge Kavanaugh's behavior and how it was received has come up several times. Beth emailed, I'm really concerned that when people say this opens the door and invites people to come out of the woodwork, it really denigrates Dr. Ford's history of discussing her assault and her concern way back when Kavanaugh was first on the shortlist. She did not come out of the woodwork. She blew up her whole life for this. She told the truth. I take Fatima's point in terms of if Christine Blasey Ford had behaved the way that Brett Kavanaugh behaved and was lampooned for on SNL, we'd have a very different opinion of her as a witness.
Yes, that's a plausible argument. And the great anxiety about this moment is what will happen if Judge Kavanaugh is confirmed despite the legitimate concerns that this completely plausible allegation was not taken seriously. And there, it really will represent a politicization of truth and of the court in ways that may be impossible to repair. Brian Fitzpatrick talked about term limits, and if I think Elizabeth Wydra is right that that may be politically infeasible to pass. The alternative is court packing. Democrats are already talking about changing the size of the Supreme Court if they get the White House and the Senate, and if that, Republicans would retaliate by changing the size after that. And we'd be back to the 1800s or right. the time of the Civil War when the court was so politicized that neither side could converge around
it. Yeah, I remember you saying that's happened in the early history of the Supreme Court, in the Jeffersonian days, that that's happened way back in the beginning of our country. Brian Fitzpatrick, one last quick comment from you before we go.
Well, I think if both sides get their oxes gored with this nomination process, we might see both sides saying, you know what, we need to do something different so both of us can get the people that we want on the court. And so I'm less pessimistic than Professor Rosen and Ms. Wydra are that term limits might be a feasible alternative.
It'd be interesting to see if that does move forward as a result of all of this. Brian Fitzpatrick, a professor at Vanderbilt Law, former clerk to the late Justice Antonin Scalia. Professor Fitzpatrick, we appreciate your time. Thanks for talking to us.
Thank you.
Elizabeth Wydra, the president of the Constitutional Accountability Center. Elizabeth, thank you.
Thank you.
And Jeffrey Rosen, president and CEO of the National Constitution Center in Philadelphia and professor at the George Washington University Law School. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you.
Remember to send us your stories about how you're handling the personal conversations this controversy has triggered. We'll switch the phones to voicemail, so leave us a message, 855-236-1A1A. This show was produced by Morgan Givens. To learn more about him and the rest of our team, go to the1a.org/staff. Until we meet again, I'm Joshua Johnson. Thank you so much for listening. This is 1A.